Hello and welcome to Amateur Radio Topics. I'm Kevin, VK6 Lima Whiskey, and in this episode we'll be talking about the recent CQ Worldwide CW contest, antennas, receive antennas, and the uptick in conditions, which have been most welcome in the last few weeks. So first of all, CQ Worldwide CW, conditions were probably better than expected. The solar flux hit a little bit over 100, and that sort of indicated we get fairly good conditions on 15 meters and 10 meters. So I think last year's CQ Worldwide CW might have made maybe 40 or 50 QSOs on 10 meters. It's a bit of a struggle. There was a bit of north-south propagation to JA from VK6. Wasn't much east-west propagation. May have worked a couple of Europeans. You know, this year it was a lot better indeed. And 15 meters opened up, was open right at the start of the contest, with some good openings to JA and also into the US. Some good signals, and a bit later on in the in proceedings, 10 meters started open up to JA, and conditions were good. The signals were excellent. And also there was some good European openings on 10 meters from here in VK6. The band, both 15 and 10, didn't stay open too much longer after the sun went down. I thought we might get slightly longer openings from 15. 15 was open a bit later, but it wasn't really open in terms of trying to, from a contest perspective, it wasn't really open from VK6. There were better options, such as 20 meters and 40 meters and the low bands at that time. But the band was still open a little bit later. 10 meters pretty well shut both days, right on sunset here. Maybe 15, 20 minutes afterwards, stations are still workable. But again, it was a question of, from a contest perspective, just picking what was the most viable band to be on. And it doesn't always pay from a contest perspective to really work the band right out, unless there aren't any other options. Normally, it's better to get to another band where the rates can be higher, and it's more useful period of time to be on another band. That's probably what it boils down to. But anyway, encouraging, very encouraging that we've got these sorts of sunspot numbers and solar flux at that level, and quite surprising. Don't think this was really predicted. I think when I checked prior to the contest, I think there's a sunspot number of maybe 60 or 70, and the corresponding flux was, as I say, up over 100, maybe 110. So that's pretty good compared to what we've had for the last 4 to 5 years, I guess. I don't know when the flux was last up at this level. It might have been around about 4 years ago. So some good signs there. The contest from VK6 was pretty good. We need fairly good conditions to make an impression on 15 and 10, obviously. Without 15 and 10, the contest can become a bit of a slog. 20 was fairly good as well. 40 was excellent. 80 on the first evening, 80 and 160 on the first evening were very good, it seemed. And the noise levels were quite low on 160 and 80. And I worked quite a few DX stations on that first day or that first night on the low bands. Not so good on the second night on the low bands for some reason. 40 was okay, and 20, 15 and 10 again were fairly good on the second day. So it was interesting. I've made some improvements to the antennas here. I've got a new setup with the 160 and 80 meter antenna. I've now got the same basic antenna I've used for some time in the past, which could best be described as it's an inverted L type antenna, but it's fed off center. It's a full wavelength on 80 meters. It's half wavelength on 160. It's got a 4-to-1 ballon at the feed point, a big air core coax choke at the feed point also, and this works. It's a bit of an unusual antenna, but it works really well for me in this location. Quite interested in trying to get an antenna that had a mix of horizontal and also vertical polarization, but I'm on rocky soil here. It's not easy to put radials down. However, the location's good. I'm on just about on top of the hill. Great takeoff to Europe, great takeoff to JA. And I first started using this antenna for 160 and 80 about 5 years ago. And I found it was fairly good. So I've improved the antenna since, refined it a little bit. The Balun is a big ferrite stack, two stacks of FT240-61 ferrites wound with Teflon coax, and I've had no problems with that Balun breaking down. It's been very good. I'm using the original Balun from more than 5 years ago, and it's been a good antenna. So I've made a few improvements to it over the last year or two. I've done a bit of experimenting with different ways of feeding it. Essentially, I've come back to the same feed method, but what I do have now is I have a parasitic element which is spaced about 15 meters away from the main driven element, and the parasitic element can be switched. I can switch in different lengths of reflector and director, or choose an omnidirectional mode, which means the parasitic has no effect. I can do that with some relays, switch that from the shack. It's quite interesting. And on 80, certainly the performance is as you would expect. I get some front to back, I get some gain in the preferred directions. The direction I'm most interested in many respects is Europe. This is the way I've got the two towers orientated, and I get some gain on 80 meters into essentially Northern Europe, but it seems to work for other directions into Europe quite nicely, not just Northern Europe. I guess the lobe is fairly broad. It's got some front to back, and also I get some small amount of gain working some of the W's on 80 meters, particularly the W's at maybe W4s, Southern USA on 80 meters. There's noticeably a little bit of gain. And also that's a little bit more local, VK2 ZLs into the Pacific. I've got some gain in that direction as well. And some front to back. So on 80 meters, it's very good. On 160, I've got the same sort of setup. I'm using the same parasitic elements. I'm switching them with the relays. And under some circumstances, it's quite noticeable. I have some gain on 160 into Europe, and also some front to back. Some interesting tests with ZL on this, in that I can see definite gain in the ZL direction and also front to back. And ZL is about 5,000 kilometers away from us in VK6. When it comes to really long haul stuff, when it comes to working into Europe or working into other parts of the world where the skip distance is maybe 15 or 18,000 kilometers, the beam headings really on 160 can be all over the place. And quite often the omnidirectional setting that I've got seems to work better on 160 than the true beam heading. Or sometimes the signal seems to be skewed by maybe 90 degrees on the heading you think it should be coming from. And all of this you can't really tell unless you've got some sort of directional antenna. Now I can pick this up through my beverages as well. I've got beverages on the US and beverages on EU as well. And I can see the difference sometimes with the beverages, whereby the signals are not really coming in on the beam heading you'd expect them to. A surprising amount of time on 160, on really long haul signals, the beam heading doesn't seem to hold true for VK6. But of course, if you've just got an omnidirectional antenna, a vertical, whatever it is, or even a high dipole, you're not really going to see this. It's hard to tell what's going on. But that's what I've found having this antenna on 160 with a degree of directivity. The gain on 160 wouldn't be as good as it is on 80. I've modeled this on NEC. I can see that the lobes on 160 are still a bit high angle and very broad. Whereas on 80 meters, the parasitic element does lower the angle of radiation down and narrow the narrow the width of the beam. So it's probably to be expected on 160. The top of the driven element on 160 is at about 27 meters, 28 meters, and about 95 feet, which is still fairly low on 160 meters in terms of wavelength. Whereas on 80 meters, obviously it's quite a bit higher in relative to the wavelength, and that's why on 80 meters I'm seeing a probably a more predictable pattern. But certainly on stations that are closer in on 160, I can definitely see gain, definitely see front to back. So it's working exactly the way it should do, but on 160 meters is a very unpredictable band. And I know from talking to some of the locals here, the consensus is that quite often, certainly at sunrise and sunset here, we quite often get some enhancement for people that are using maybe more of a high angle antenna, where there seems to be an advantage over using a vertical antenna at that time. So the whole essence of this antenna that I'm using at the moment on 80 and 160 is that I've got horizontal and vertical polarization. It's meant to be a bit of an insurance policy no matter what the conditions are. The actual results on 160 and 80 have been very good, and I'm pretty happy with it. And that extends through to using it in the contest, which is normally a fairly stringent test of how your antennas are working. I've made the mistake in the past of putting up antennas, using and testing them out of contest time, and then finding out that when I get into the contest and the relative noise levels are that much higher in the various places in the world that I'm trying to work into, i.e. Europe or the US, that all of a sudden the antennas don't seem as good anymore. So it's always nice to have an antenna that you put up and you test and you find out that in a contest, yep, it still gets through, it still works okay. You can still hold a frequency, which is actually fairly important, particularly on 80 meters. It's not just a question of trying to work stations sometimes. You sometimes want to be on a frequency and be able to hold that frequency and control that frequency. And you can't do that unless you've got a fairly good signal. On 160 in a contest, it's a bit different. You're quite happy to get on 160 and maybe work the countries, work the zones, pick them off, search and pounce. There's no real motivation to run them on 160 meters in CQ worldwide, you know, from VK6. It's good enough to be able to get on there and rack up a multiplier count on 160. But on 80, yep, it is possible to run them and hold the frequency with this antenna, and that's a really good sign. Just moving up the bands a bit, so we go to 40 meters, and I've also changed a few things around there. I've now got a three element wire beam fixed on Europe and reversible, so I can Europe short path, Europe long path. Now there's not, the Europe long path is open at various times, and we have worked quite a few Europeans on that long path, but again on 40 meters sometimes it's not always the place to be in a contest at that time. But it is quite useful having that directivity and that front to back on 40 meters, because there are other times where the Caribbean and the southern US are more easily worked on that European long path setting on the wire beam. So this is a fairly simple setup I've got on 40. I've got the three element wire beam, the two parasitic elements at either side of the driven element. They've both got switched stubs, essentially 3/8 of a wavelength on 40 meters plus half a wavelength. And I switch them in and out, open and close them either side of the driven element. And that gives me an instant switch backwards and forwards, which works really well. In the other direction, on the other tower, I've just got my two element switchable, reversible beam on the US short path, long path. And that's really useful because we get a very good US long path opening in the morning here in VK6. And the short path, that's also a bit of a staple on 40 meters into the US. So the two sets of antennas obviously at right angles to each other on the two towers 15 meters apart. Not too much interaction. I was a little bit worried about these other changes I was making to the 160 meter, 80 meter antenna with the interaction I would get on 40, but when I modeled it in NEC, the interaction was minimal. Particularly if I had the 160 meter, 80 meter antenna switched to, or the parasitic switched basically out of circuit. then I really didn't get much, according to NEC anyway, much interaction. And that seemed to bear out in the contest. I could kind of tell in the contest, switching backs and forwards, and the response that I was getting, it worked very well. And it's really handy on 40 metres to have a beam that can be switched in four directions with a flick of a switch, rather than having to try and rotate something. And I cast my mind back to when I had a rotatable antenna on 40 metres, and it was a pretty big antenna, but it didn't work any better than what I've got now. It was a two-element rotatable. And in fact, probably, it's hard to be definitive about this, but I would say that the three-element I've got on 40 metres is possibly slightly better than the two-element. It's really difficult to quantify it without having both antennas up at the same time. But just the feel that I was getting in the contest, I felt that I was doing fairly well on 40 metres with that three element on the short path to Europe. The short path to Europe from VK6 is really important, because it's a path that I can access sometimes when the other VKs and all the ZLs are not always getting that good path. And that's not just on 40 metres, but it applies to the other HF bands as well. 20 metres was pretty good. Probably not, maybe not as good as I thought it might be, but when you're doing single ops, all band on CQ Worldwide, you can't be everywhere all at the same time. I was running single operator 2 radio for all of the contest in different ways. So on occasions I'd be running it as genuine single operator 2 radio, looking for multipliers and other band openings on the second radio and trying to run on the first radio. And then on other occasions I was using both radios at the same time with the QSOs interleaved, dual CQ and dual pile up. So that actually worked quite well for me in this contest, probably better than it has before. I've been putting in some degree of training with this, trying to get a little bit better at the two band interleave QSO method of running two pileups. The thing with this is you've got to have two pileups. Sometimes that doesn't always happen. Or sometimes you get a situation, and I had this a few times, where the pileup is so big on radio one that you sometimes feel that, well, let's not mess with the rate. It's not worth trying to get the pileup going on radio two as well, because I might mess up the rate on radio one. This is just a bit of a learning curve as far as that's concerned. But there was periods where on 10 and 15 metres I had both radios going, running a pile up on both frequencies, on the 10 metre one, the 15 metre one, interleaving the QSOs. It worked quite well for quite long periods of time, and also did the same with 20 and 40 metres. A little bit harder with 20 and 40. 40 metres, there's a lot, obviously the band's not as quiet as 10 and 15. It's a little bit more rugged in terms of trying to work through the QOM on 40 sometimes. I've got the receive antennas, I've got the beverage antennas, that does help. And one of the biggest things with the single operator 2 radio this year has been trying to get the receive antennas organised so that I didn't have any interstation interference, or very, very minimal. And pretty well managed to achieve that. The band's got to be open for the receive antennas to work properly. Obviously the receive antennas have got an HF and not as good as the spider beam, and they're not as good as the 40 meter three element beam and that sort of thing. But they're pretty good antennas. They're up fairly high, 50 to 60 feet up. They're about, they're at least 100 meters away from the main transmit antennas. So if I'm using those on another band, I'm normally getting minimal or no interference, which is actually really good. And that's, I'm doing this without using any bandpass filtering, other than the filtering that's already on the IC7610, which is fairly good. It's got some good internal filtering. So that all worked pretty seamlessly, and I was able to kind of keep the concentration going on that. I do kind of find with those modes, the single operator 2 radio and the interleave QSO mode, that sometimes if the concentration starts to waver, then it's easier just to go back to one radio for a little while, give yourself a bit of a break, just operate one radio, then come back to it. But as time is going on, I'm able to spend longer on the single operator two radio continuously. A 48-hour contest, that's pretty hard. And I normally try and get a break in between on the Sunday morning, normally around about 3 hours sleep, something like that, trying to just make it so that I can get through the rest of the contest in some sort of reasonable shape. I have done 48 hours straight before, but basically by the end of the contest I'm like a zombie, and I'm not actually really sure that it's the best way to spend the last part of the contest, and I don't think it's really that efficient. So we do naturally get a bit of a flat spot here on the Sunday morning in VK6 in that contest, so kind of makes sense to try and take advantage of that and just recharge the batteries a bit. Also made a few changes to the spider beam. So it's all wire antennas here. The spider beam is a good antenna. And over the years, I've changed a few things around with the spider beam, trying to get it to work better. So the existing original spider beam has a common feed point, so to speak. So it's got one one-to-one ballon at the feed point, and all three bands, 20, 15 and 10, run off that ballon. And that does actually work okay. I've had it set up like that. It's fine. There's a bit of interaction between the bands because of the common feed point, but it works okay. So this year I wanted to change things around a bit, particularly in relation to the single operator two radio. And I separated out the feed lines. I haven't been using a ferrite ballon on the spider beam for some time. I've been using just an air cord coax type ballon. So I've got separate feed lines now on the spider beam, 10, 15 and 20. And I found that something like four turns on a 70 mil diameter former for 10 meters, five turns on 15, six turns on 20, that works pretty well. But getting rid of the ferrite there at the center, I'm eliminating any risk of any saturation or anything like that. So that seems like quite a good setup. One of the interesting problems that I had once I did that is that although I had a good match on 20 and I had a good match on 15, my match on 10 meters was rubbish. And I couldn't really quite figure this out. So I did some more modeling with NEC. I'd already remodeled the spider beam I just decided to remodel it from scratch. And I was able to get what I felt was slightly better performance than maybe the published figures from spider beam. And I also remodeled it with a solid copper wire, 14 gauge wire, which is what I'm using at the moment. And anyway, I got to 10 meters and the match was terrible. So I wasn't so happy about that. But when I delved into it a little bit more with NEC, what I found was that the effect of the running the 10 meter feed line independently, for whatever reason, meant that the 10 meter feed point was quite low impedance. It appears that when you bundle up those feed lines into one, this problem on 10 meters is somewhat masked, and I'm not quite sure why. I'm not quite sure the theory of that, but it is. If you run the feed line independently, the 10 meter feed point is definitely lower than what it should be. So on 10 meters, it's the spider beam's got four active elements. It's got a reflector, a driven element, and two directors. And this is enough to probably lower that feed point on 10 meters. So I designed a hairpin match, set it up on 10 meters. That worked really well. Brought the SWR back down to something like 1:1. Pretty happy with that. And it certainly worked really well in the contest. And although, again, it's a little bit like the equation on 40 minutes, it's sometimes hard to tell whether or not some of these changes have made a difference. But a contest is normally a really good way to find out if what you've done is actually working, because it's a fairly good test. And you get a feel on the bands as whether or not you're really getting out, whether or not you're loud, and whether or not people are responding you know, without messing up your call and that sort of thing. So, or whether or not you've got control of the frequency sometimes, that's probably a fairly good indication as well. If you can't control the frequency in a contest type environment, you're really going to struggle to run a pile up and keep things on any sort of an equal footing. So that was a wrap up for the contest really. The end result was a little bit over 4,000 QSOs. Pretty happy with that. The multipliers were down, and that's probably an indication of where we are at the moment with lack of travellers, and that's the reason for that is fairly obvious. So I think most of the reported scores indicated that the multipliers were down, and that's probably a transient thing for this year, and who knows, let's see how things go with that. But some of the QSO totals were very high. Again, some tremendous scores put in from people in Europe and also the Caribbean. Fantastic QSO totals, 11,000 QSOs, that sort of thing. Generally speaking, running single operator two radio with interleave QSOs, really fantastic performances. And slightly different scenario to trying to work a contest from VK6, obviously. We're quite remote, so it's not that easy to try and get close to that, but it's interesting. It will be interesting to see what happens as the conditions improve. Obviously, I think, you know, some of the guys that are putting in these sorts of scores will only continue to improve anyway with the method of operation they're using. And I would expect that as the sunspot cycle increases, that these QSO totals will become even bigger. And they're phenomenal QSO totals for a 48-hour contest. And the guys that are putting these scores in are operating the whole 48 hours. So very well done to them. Receive antennas, covered those. I've got, as I say, a couple of HF receive antennas, and I've got my beverages for LF. The HF receive antennas are fairly simple. I've got an extended double Z for 20, 15 and 10. Seems to work quite well. The top of that's around about 20 meters up. I actually seem to find it works better as a sloper antenna. I get slightly less interaction with my main transmit antennas. And I've got another antenna, which is a sort of a half size ZS6BKW, which also is set up and configured as a sloper. I've also got a 20 meter dipole there, just a general receive antenna. And all these antennas work quite well on receive. You know, they're not so good if you're trying to use them for transmit, but on receive, the signal to noise ratio is pretty good. They're very quiet. And really it's all about the ratio of signal to noise, not so much about how strong the signal is on there. Obviously the signal's stronger on the spider beam, but these receive antennas are specifically set up so I can operate single operator two radio with no bandpass filtering at the moment. I have actually just finished building a 20 meter bandpass filter, which does appear to work really well, but I didn't actually use it in the contest. I only really finished it the week before the contest, and already had everything set up before then. But I'm just in the process of working through and just building some of these bandpass filters. They're high power bandpass filters. And the first one worked okay. I bought a new mini nano VNA, which was very useful for setting up the bandpass and sorting out the component values, etc. So that's probably about the lot for this episode. There's no more contests coming up just yet. Probably did a little bit more antenna work during the summer months. Got a few other plans of antenna designs I'd like to test out. Summer's not always the greatest time for antenna work here in VK6 because it's just pretty hot. But thinking that might do a little bit more work on the receive antennas. I've got a new tower that I need to try and get up. It's a 30 meter or 100 foot tower. But at the moment it's just sitting down on some wooden blocks in the grass. So I need to get that organized. Essentially it's a fairly well-known design here in Australia. It's what's called a Hills Tower. And I've got another Hills Tower, which is more than 40 years old, and I'm looking to replace that. So this 100-foot tower will do that. But first of all, I need to, I've got a little bit of work on it. I've upgraded the old Hills Tower with some larger pulleys, larger size diameter, wire rope, bigger winch, different winching mechanism, in the way that the tower sections all telescope together and all go up contiguously. So that's quite, it's actually quite a big project. It involves quite a bit of welding, etc. And that's something that really like to try and get that antenna up and sorted before the next contest season. So maybe before WPXCW in May, might be able to get the one sorted out. And that will probably give me a little bit more height on the second tower, which will help a little bit more, get the spider beam up a bit more, get the 40 meter beams up a little bit higher, and so it goes on. So it's just a question of a little bit of continual improvement. Anyway, that's about the lot for this episode. Any questions, you can email through to me at vk6lw.kev@gmail.com. I do have a new QSL manager now. And if you go onto qrz.com, you'll see on the QSL manager listed there. So that will help, particularly with stations that are looking for a QSL card from the USA or Europe, because the QSL manager is now in Europe. So 73s for now. Take care and look forward to presenting some more news from VK6LW in the next episode.